Hi, and welcome to another Cyber Podcast episode. I'm your host, Christoph Limpeler, and in this episode, Derek Morgan joins us to talk about a popular and powerful tool called Terraform and how it helps with infrastructure as code. Now, I've known Derek for years, and in fact, him and I used to be coworkers, and then he started a company called More Than Certified, where he teaches a variety of DevOps-related topics, such as Terraform, Docker, and others. He also currently also works for a company called Spacelift, which is an infrastructure delivery platform. So we're going to chat about infrastructure as code, what it is, why it's important, and also how you can start learning it, especially if you're in cybersecurity, how Terraform fits into that. And of course, we'll also talk about Spacelift. So Derek, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really great to have you here.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
So let's start off easy by talking about your background. How did you first get started in IT?
Well, long story. I mean, honestly, I started in retail, working for your Circuit Cities and Best Buys and everything, got interested and really just started the certification game, started powering through Microsoft certifications and things like that, and started diving into the more advanced stuff until I started working for a fairly large hosting company that I'm not even sure if they're still around, but, you know, AWS basically ate their lunch. But I worked for a hosting company for a while, started dealing with pretty large infrastructure there, and of course started to see the benefits of infrastructure as code, which kind of existed, but not quite. So, you know, we're dealing with a lot of hardware, a lot of physical machines. You've got a lot of people racking and stacking constantly. You've got hardware failures, all of that. And of course, after hosting, I kept moving kind of up into more cloud-related roles until I started teaching Terraform and other DevOps tools with, you know, with you, of course. And now I'm a developer advocate at Spacelift, where I build a ton of demos and work with people to help them adopt our platform and, of course, also adopt infrastructure as code in general. And I create courses as well, which you touched on.
So it sounds like throughout your career, you've kind of had at least one hand in the infrastructure side. Was that on purpose? Did you just really enjoy infrastructure? Or is that just kind of what you fell into and then you just kept building on top of that? And that's what made you focus on infrastructure as code?
Well, I've always liked the physical realm overall. And of course, you know, clouds basically killed that overall. Of course, it is actually just servers, but you know, the idea of building infrastructure was always something that clicked for me versus, like, say, code. And I'm decent at code, but infrastructure is something that I can put my hands on. I can see it. I can feel it. So I've always just gravitated towards building things like that instead of going, you know, the programming route.
Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see that. Not everybody is going to want to sit there and build out web applications or mobile applications, but maybe you do enjoy scripting things or writing some lines of code here and there. And if you love infrastructure and you like scripting, then that might be a really good match, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I did a lot of Cisco stuff kind of coming up into the in the world, a lot of networking, things like that. So that was another area where, you know, always in the command line. But again, not necessarily coding things out and dealing with algorithms and whatnot. It's more, how am I supposed to get something from point A to point B? How am I supposed to help this developer get their code to the web, et cetera, et cetera? That type of stuff just really engages me, just really keeps me happy.
So I love the term infrastructure as code because it's fairly self-explanatory. But if you have somebody who's listening right now where maybe they've never deployed infrastructure, maybe they've never used AWS or Azure or Google Cloud, and they're curious to try it out, maybe they're right on the verge of launching some resources in, say, AWS Cloud, how would you break down what infrastructure as code is and why it could be helpful to them?
So when you're in the cloud, when you're playing around with AWS and or GCP or Azure, and you're in the console, you know, every button you press is basically communicating with an API. So whenever you communicate with that API, there are multiple ways to do that. And infrastructure as code basically allows you, instead of going and using traditional click ops and clicking through things, all you have to do is type out what you want. You can just script it. And that can be done if you're using Terraform with HCL, if you're using CloudFormation for AWS, for instance, that can be in YAML or JSON, or, you know, if you're in Pulumi or CDK, you can use Python, TypeScript, etc. And that allows you to basically define all of the resources you need, such as servers or networking, switch, you know, virtual switches, VPCs, things like that, right there as code so that you always have it. It's always ready to go. All you have to do is apply it. Instead of going in and redoing things and whatnot, it maintains that state so that you always have what you're supposed to have to get your applications where they need to go.
And so at what point do you think it makes sense for somebody to learn a tool like Terraform to apply these infrastructure as code concepts? Is it like if they're brand new to AWS Cloud, they create an account today and they jump in, would you recommend they start off by learning Terraform, or should they first go into that cloud environment, click around a little bit, see how painful that can be, and then realize, oh, you know what, this is why I could use something like Terraform?
You should definitely learn the cloud first because Terraform is very, very powerful. And you can do a lot of damage to your checkbook if you're not careful. So you definitely want to understand at least billing, basic virtual private cloud networks, basic EC2 instances. Understand the cloud a little bit, but then start scripting as soon as you can. Once you understand how the billing works and how not to lose your money, or once you understand the security aspects where you're not accidentally uploading keys, things like that, once you're past that, get scripting as soon as you can.
I think that's a really good tip. And I'm glad you mentioned the checkbook thing. I wasn't even thinking in that direction, but that's actually a really good point. If you write out, oh, I want these resources launched and they're not in the free tier, even though it's a brand new account that's still in free tier, you're going to get billed for that, right? Like if you launch a really beefy EC2 instance, or you launch a really big database or something like that, you're going to get billed for it. And so if you're not really confident with what you're launching and just copy and pasting some Stack Overflow lines of code because you just want to see what happens with it, just keep in mind that that could end up creating quite the bill at the end of the month.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, neither of us have ever seen that happen with a few accidental Redshift databases or, as soon as you touch things like managed services like Aurora, for instance, I mean, you're looking at $400 or $500 a month the second you kick that off. There's no you get a month for free or whatever. Now, I will say that AWS will give you one forgiveness. And I'm not saying that because I accidentally uploaded my AWS keys to GitHub once when I was first starting off, and I ended up getting charged $5,000 allegedly. But AWS will usually give you a freebie, but it's best not to try to use that ever. So yeah, you definitely want to understand what things cost, how to manage those costs, how to get alerted on those costs. Get that down. Really understand AWS security, IAM, users, groups, things like that, and the billing. And then get into Terraform, CloudFormation, something as soon as you can.
Yeah, and we're not saying that to try and scare you off from trying it out, right? That's important too. It's just you have to know, okay, well, if I launch this resource per the AWS pricing or Azure pricing or whatever cloud you're using, here's what I can expect to see on my bill by the end of the month. It's making sure you understand that. And like Derek said, making sure you have the correct billing alerts in place so that if something starts approaching or exceeding that threshold, you get a notification right away. You don't find out 30 days later. So really good points. But again, don't worry about it too much. But at the same time, you do need to make sure that you're aware of those facts. Now, Derek, you mentioned something called AWS CloudFormation. You've got Azure's Resource Manager templates. So you've got some options that you can use that are native to that cloud platform versus using something like Terraform. Why would somebody use Terraform instead of the native cloud provided service? And how does that compare? Like, when would you recommend learning one over the other?
So you want to understand, the cloud native service sometimes is absolutely necessary. There are times where they might actually beat Terraform for a certain resource. If there's a brand new resource, you might find that CloudFormation is the only way to deploy it. But generally speaking, I always gravitate towards Terraform because it supports all of the clouds. Now, there are a lot of companies really working on a multi-cloud strategy, and although it does have its benefits, if you're not a major, 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 like Fortune 500 company, it's usually a waste of time and resources. You're probably going to want to stick to one cloud. so that you can dedicate all of your resources to learning that cloud, the nuances and everything, and not waste a lot of time trying to balance between these clouds. So generally speaking, I still do recommend one cloud, but I also still recommend Terraform because not only does it support clouds, it supports databases, it supports on-premises type architecture, it supports a lot of things that you might find that you actually need to script out that may not be in, say, CloudFormation or something like that. Now, CloudFormation does have a mechanism that does allow you to develop custom type resources, but it's an absolute pain in the rear. And I strongly suggest using the right tool for the job. And probably 9 times out of 10, Terraform's going to fit the bill.
I can attest to that. After having used CloudFormation for a number of years, especially when we were working with launching lab environments and whatnot, which I'm sure you'll remember fondly.
God, don't remind me.
This was before CloudFormation even supported YAML, so you had to use JSON. And I can sit here and say that it was not the most fun thing in the world. There were a lot of quirks. There were a lot of issues. And so I personally just kind of enjoy the way that Terraform works better. I do think CloudFormation has improved significantly over the years. And it's fair. It's powerful. It's a powerful service if you're using that specific cloud provider. So it is nice to be able to say, look, I've got something that can work multi-cloud if I need to, even though, frankly, you're probably never going to need that unless, like you said, you work for a Fortune 500 company or something like that. But it is nice to have that vendor-neutral approach. But also just in general, I feel like it's a more enjoyable experience if you're using something like that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like, you know, with CloudFormation, if you want to do something custom, you basically have to deploy a Lambda resource. You've got to do a lot of extra stuff that just absolutely is way easier within Terraform. Now, one of the other major points about Terraform is you do have a state file that you do have to manage. And that's something that not everybody wants to have to do, because in that state file are a lot of secrets, a lot of very important information. Now, you have services such as HashiCorp's cloud, you've got Spacelift, you've got several other services that will manage that state for you. You can also store it in a S3 bucket and use DynamoDB to manage that. But honestly, at the end of the day, find one of those free services, or at least free tiers, and get your state managed somewhere safe. Because if you're deploying resources and you lose that state file is the definition of everything you've deployed. If you lose it, you're in trouble. You basically can't destroy all of your resources or modify them anymore unless you go through a lot of manual steps to re-import those. So just something to consider, where CloudFormation and ARMS or Bicep, which is now what Azure is moving to, those manage that state for you. Terraform, you do have a separate file, so you do want to make sure that you manage that properly.
I'm glad you brought up secrets, and let's talk about that a little bit more, because so, for example, say that you're clicking around the console and you're launching a resource, you're generating public and private key pairs, you're generating security groups, and so on and so forth. We could keep going with it. But the point that I'm trying to get to is, as you take that and instead of clicking around the console, you put that in, you write that out as code, infrastructure as code, right? Sometimes you're going to have to put in some secrets so that as you deploy the resources, you've got a database with a username and password. You've got those key pairs and so on. How do you make sure that that stays out of something that's going to get checked into a repository, or that's even going to leak as a hard-coded secret that somebody else can access in production, for example? Like, what are some ways you can make sure that you avoid that situation if you're using a tool like Terraform?
So there are a lot of ways. And of course, you know, first of all, you want to make sure that that stuff doesn't get hard coded to begin with. And you can use things like Terraform Sentinel, for instance, or HashiCorp Sentinel, rather. Or you can use Open Policy Agent, which is actually a policy as code type tool that can prevent those from ever getting put into your code. So that's where you want to start. You want to start by ensuring it never happens, but then of course, you also need a place to put them. Now, secrets can be stored. HashiCorp actually has a great product called Vault. That's one way that you can store those secrets very securely. You can also use, if you're in AWS, Parameter Store and a few of their other ways of managing those secrets. You can also use other third-party tools. Again, I've got to mention Spacelift a few times since I'm a developer advocate for them. Spacelift will actually encrypt those secrets for you. It'll manage all that secret management. HashiCorp's cloud will also do that without having to do Vault. It abstracts all of that. And there are several other tools out there that will keep those secrets out of your repository. And again, it's so important that you do keep those secrets protected. So you've got AWS keys, you've got SSH keys, you've got all sorts of keys flying around. You want to make sure those things stay safe.
The other thing that's super useful is because you're writing this out, you're describing it as lines of code, you could actually run static code analysis on those Terraform files. And so that way they can look for known issues. For example, if you're leaving your security groups open for EC2 instances, or you're leaving your buckets open for the entire internet to access when it should be restricted to specific IPs, for example, the code that, or the scanner that you're using to check your code could alert you and say, hey, this is not a policy that you want to deploy. So before you hit Terraform apply and deploy this infrastructure, you're going to want to fix this first. Have there been some approaches you've tried to use that you've preferred over others for this?
I mean, you want to use a multifaceted approach. You want to catch stuff like S3 buckets at every single stage that you can. So you've got within, you know, AWS or your specific cloud, you can start there by defining policies that will keep up with everything. And a lot of times those policies are actually defined with Terraform. So, of course, you've got kind of a double-edged sword there. If you're defining those policies within Terraform and you're trusting those people in Terraform to define the policies properly to keep those things from happening, you still can get mistakes. So after that, you can actually define within Terraform. They have different type of conditional checks that you can run to ensure that everything works and everything is defined properly. Then on top of that, you can actually use Open Policy Agent, HashiCorp Sentinel, or some other policy as code tools that can then scan on top of that. So you've got at least three methods right there that you can use to ensure that every step of the way your security is locked and secure.
That's so helpful. You can run this through so many different tools. It can be part of your automation pipeline. Instead of you just clicking around late at night, you're tired, you misclick something, and bam, you now have all of your S3 files open in the public. You've got that that secret key that's checked into your repository, and you've got that $5,000 bill that ends up in your AWS console.
Not that that's ever happened to me, but yeah.
No, of course not.
Yeah, that's definitely something. And again, you know, it's kind of you don't want to end up trusting one person with all of your security. And by doing all of these checks, you can ensure that your security infrastructure is 100% locked down. You've got multiple points of protection. Again, if you're defining that policy as code that checks all of your scripting, then on top of the scripting in Terraform, you can then protect everything within AWS. And then on top of that, you can run scans. There's so many ways to do this properly. And you want to make sure that you do not skimp on this. And you also want to make sure that one person and one person only isn't responsible for this. Make sure you have multiple people ensuring that everything is secure.
So if somebody's listening to this and they're really curious to try out Terraform and they never have had the chance to, what do you say is one of the best ways for them to learn how to use a tool like Terraform? Are there specific projects you'd recommend or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I would love to just push my courses, which I do actually have some free courses that'll get you going really quick in AWS and Azure. And then I've also got a paid course that'll basically run you through everything through multiple projects. HashiCorp Learn is actually also very good. The Terraform documentation on HashiCorp is fantastic. And then, you know, otherwise, really just get building. Go in and just click around in the console in AWS or whatever cloud you're using, build something through ClickOps, and then work on scripting that out. Now, eventually you'll get to the point where you can just script everything out, but if you don't know the code the cloud very, very well, you'll want to get in there and get familiar with it first, because there are a lot of nuances and little issues that you might encounter that Terraform may not tell you about, whereas whenever you're in the console and clicking around, you'll see like all these little prompts and all the warnings and everything that you need to see to understand how to build something. Once you've done that, you hop into the documentation and you just start scripting. It's really, really straightforward overall. Of course, there are issues and nuances and things with everything. But for the most part, once you're comfortable building the infrastructure, coding it out is not going to be difficult at all.
And if you have any questions and you're not already in the Cyber Discord, you can join by going to cyber.com/Discord. I'm there, of course. Derek's also in there. So I'm going to volunteer both of us to help answer any questions you may have with Terraform if you're trying to get started and you just need a little bit more clarity as to which steps to take. But I think what Derek just said here should definitely help you get started with one, focus on learning the cloud, at least at the basics of it, so you understand what terminology you're dealing with and so on. And then after that, pull up the documentation. Think of a cool little project you could work on and jump on some of those courses, free or paid, and get going with it. But yeah, if you need any help, I'm going to go ahead and volunteer both of us now, if that's all right, Derek.
Oh, I mean, of course. Yeah, reach out to me anytime. I've got my own Discord. I am active in the Cyber Discord as well, and I'm more than happy to answer wherever. Reach out anytime. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I'm on all the things. So yeah, anytime. I'm more than happy to help.
So before we move on to the quick fire round, I do need to ask a little bit more about Spacelift for my own understanding, but also I'm curious to hear what infrastructure delivery platform means. Like, how does that tie into what we've been talking about so far?
So whenever you deploy this code, I mean, just like any code that you want to run, you usually put it into a repository, whether it's GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, wherever. And so what we do is just like any other Jenkins or code delivery type platform, we manage the infrastructure as code specifically. So once you commit your code to a repository, we can pick that up and we can authenticate your cloud. We can keep your secrets safe. We can allow you to insert variable definitions, all sorts of things. And we'll also manage your state for you and deploy straight to whatever cloud you're looking for. So it really simplifies everything. It keeps everything more secure. It makes it easy. And we actually have a pretty generous free tier. So if you get into this really great infrastructure as code type situation where you are deploying into GitHub or whatever, we can basically take the rest and manage everything for you.
So it sounds like that could be really helpful for a business that is running production environments and that needs a pipeline that they can kind of rely on to say, okay, well, we need to go from point A to point Z, where point A is start coding some stuff, and then point Z is the production environment. Everything in between, there's a lot of moving parts, like we talked about earlier. You can scan for secrets that are left in there, hard-coded, and so on and so forth. Right, we don't have to go back through that, but point being that it just kind of helps tie everything together. Is that a good succinct summary of that?
And I think one of the really big things is when you have multiple developers who are all working, like you might have a security person who is working on just the security part of your AWS infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then you have a EC2 person who's working on EC2 instances or working on Lambdas or working on Kubernetes or whatever you're doing in the cloud. You have a big team, and those teams basically are pushing or they're filing pull requests against this repository to make modifications to the code. And we can pick that up, help you merge them, help you manage all of that, and ensure that your code is always compliant. We'll run it. We can run compliancy checks. We can do all of that, all while keeping it in a secure location and deploying securely.
Gotcha. Awesome. That sounds great. Well, Derek, let's move on to the final stage of this episode, which is a quick fire round, which is basically just me asking quick questions and then just give me some really short answers on those, starting with what are some of your hobbies outside of work?
Running, biking, hiking, and climbing, I would say are probably my four big ones. As much as I can get outside, I try to. Sitting inside and hacking away is fun, but honestly, I prefer to do it on rainy days. And sunny days, I try to get outside and get some vitamin D.
And you're actually visiting me here in Denver, and we had a pretty beautiful day yesterday, so it was kind of hard to stay indoors and do any work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Easy. I mean, honestly, I don't even want to be here on this podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
It's just so beautiful out. It's like, all right, let's wrap this up. Let's go outside.
Yeah, it is gorgeous.
What are some of your favorite either books or movies or podcasts? And it does not have to be IT related.
Yeah, lately, I've kind of been following along, you know, kind of biting any type of popular Netflix show or anything, I've probably dabbled in. I'm watching Better Call Saul right now, which of course is just phenomenal. I'm watching Only Murders in the Building. If you haven't seen that one, really good show. There's a ton of other shows I've been keeping up on. Reading, unfortunately, has been mostly technical documentation lately. I'd like to dive back out of that eventually, but right now that's about all I get to. And as far as podcast goes, I talk so much, sometimes listening to other people talk actually stresses me out. So I don't bother with too many podcasts, but occasionally I'll dive into something like the Always Sunny podcast. If you've ever caught that one, I strongly recommend checking it out if you're a fan of that show. If you are sensitive to naughty words, you might not want to check it out though.
Good tip. Now, in your opinion, and for the last one, what's one area that we are completely missing the mark in terms of IT education?
Oh, IT education. I mean, fundamentals, hands down. You know, like you're, of course, working on the security aspect, and a lot of people are missing that completely. I mean, the number of people who can't understand basic SSH key exchanges and things like that is crazy. So that's a really big one. Again, like I teach Terraform, and a lot of people come into it and they don't understand the cloud that they're actually trying to deploy to. They don't understand Bash. They don't understand a lot of like basic Linux intro stuff. And that becomes a serious problem. You can't just skip those steps and hop right to the big money. You've got to learn those foundations. So that's something that I've been trying to help with, you've been trying to help with, and I think we really need to focus on, especially for all the new people out there.
Yeah, that's a really good one, and something that I probably see on a weekly basis at this point, where somebody's trying to, they're trying to do something that's way more advanced than their skill level, and that's just, that leads to them quitting because they're trying to ride the bike without even learning how to ride the bike. It doesn't really make sense. So yeah, that's a good one. I would agree with that.
Yeah, they're trying to ride a unicycle without even being able to walk. Sometimes I'd say it's, yeah, it gets pretty rough, but don't let that scare you, but you do need to take some time.
Learn the fundamentals. It will pay massive dividends throughout your entire career, without a doubt. So Derek, if people want to follow up with you, how can they connect and reach out?
Of course, Cyber Discord. I'm there. Feel free to reach out. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. You name it, I'm probably around. It's kind of my job to be as loud as possible. So feel free to reach out anytime. If I don't get back to you right away, I will eventually get to you. I make it a personal responsibility not to ignore people.
Derek, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it, especially because I know how hard it is to stay indoors right now with the beautiful weather. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the episode as well. Please reach out to Derek. Even if you don't have any questions, just reach out to say thank you. His time is valuable, of course, and so I really appreciate him spending about 30 minutes with us today. His name is Derek Morgan, so pretty easy to find on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and so on. But if you can't find him, reach out. I'll be glad to help you out, help you find his profiles. And then, yeah, just reach out to him and connect there and thank him for his time. And thank you all for tuning in. I'll see you next time.
Cheers.